A warm welcome back to the Big Small Business Show. And if you didn't watch the first part of today's interview, maybe you should go back and watch it. Maybe you shouldn't, actually. It's just too depressing. We're talking about grey listing. And in studio with us, we've got our regular doom and gloom merchant with us, Jonita Steenekamp. She's Project Director Governance at Sika. And we're talking about grey listing and what is the impact on us as small business. Is it just the cost of finance?
So cost of finance will definitely increase. I think it's a roll-on effect. So because we might be on this grey list, when people do business with us, they're going to ask for more information. So to make sure that what we're saying we're using it for, the money will actually be used for that. So definitely more red tape. Somebody Shabalala from Standard Bank said the cost of lending is definitely going to increase because everybody now has to filter all this additional red tape in. And with that, there's also changes in laws that's coming, which will impact small business as well.
So it gets harder and harder. And National Treasury knew about this, of course. Why didn't they assign more resources to make sure that we weren't greylisted?
Sure, Alon. I think they were aware of it. We were already on some list where they were watching us. So yeah, from our previous evaluation in 2013, actually. Mm-hmm. So I think they were watching us, but I think COVID also threw a spanner in the works. So maybe just all the resources were not used where it should have been.
Okay, so that is the statement we heard. But have we definitively been greylisted?
Not yet.
What is the date that is supposed to happen?
Okay, so that's sort of still a process. So National Treasury and the FIC is working to try and solve this. You know, you said that the director said that she can't see us not being greylisted. By November this year, we have to report to the FIC, the FATF. And by February next year, they're having a meeting. And at that meeting, they will then decide, have we done enough or not? And that's why in the next few months, I think quite a lot is going to be happening.
And so one of the changes the National Treasury is working on is the amendments to the FICA schedules, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Where are we on that and what are those?
What does it mean?
What are those changes? Okay. It sounds like more change.
Yes, more change. So you remember you spoke about estate agent and lawyers. So, and they're already on this list. So this list says that if you are performing these type of services, you have to FICA your clients. So that's why estate agents, lawyers, banks already do that. But some of the changes that they're now proposing is bringing in services that accountants normally used to render. Mm-hmm. So that's where our members, our accountants, are also going to be impacted and our relationship with our clients. So if we act as a trustee on your trust, and it's not just accountants, they talk about the whole service. So anybody that assists you in creating, operating, or managing a business would now be on this schedule. And again, then every time I do business with you, I'll have to risk rate you, decide, are you a high risk? Are you a low risk? And then based on that, I'll have to make sure that I find out where your money comes from. Is your address your real address? Is your company, is the directors real people? So accountants or people that provide these services will now also have to basically FICA.
But how do you find? I've just filled in a FICA mm-hmm. form to open up an account at a bank. And they ask me, what's your source of funding? And there's a... is it this, and this, yes. And I just push a radio button and says it's savings or whatever the case may be. Maybe it's not. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's through the sale of illicit goods.
Yes.
Me just pushing a button mm-hmm. is not exactly finding out where my money comes from.
Okay. So what the people on the other side, even the banks, would do is they would risk rate you. So they would say, they can Google you and say, oh, but you're a real person, you do exist. They can check with Home Affairs. So based on your risk rating, there will probably be more information required. So I think you probably might be a low risk in terms of that.
Very because low risk.
People know who you are.
I hope my bank manager is watching. Very low risk.
But if I were to come to you, nobody's ever heard of me.
Yeah.
I've got a bank
Everyone's
account
heard
in
of
the
you.
UK.
Everyone's heard of you.
Then they would say, well, it's a higher risk. I might actually want to come and see your factory. Mm. I want to see...
And that's cost.
Yes. All that increased cost.
That's increasing costs. Okay, and of course, now coming back to the trust now, mm-hmm. okay, they're changing the laws to such as the Trust Property Control Act.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. So National Treasury is doing all these things. They're changing the schedules. Plus, they have what they call an omnibus bill. And one of the changes there is the Trust Property Control Act. So currently, again, as with nonprofits, one of the biggest issues is they're saying people are hiding behind trusts.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go and try and find out who's the trustee. You'll never know who's the trustees, who's the beneficiaries. So what they're doing for trusts now is the trustee, or it's the trustee's responsibility, you'll have to keep a register and say, these are the beneficiaries of the trust. This is the founder. This is the trustees. And then this register has to be filed with the master's office. And the master's office then has to keep this information and make it available for any international and local organization that's got the authority and that are maybe investigating these illicit flow of funds. So no hiding behind a trust anymore.
So if we look at this, mm-hmm. all right, and I understand why, and you know, there's loopholes all over the place. But the other, how many members of the FATF are there? Did you say
36.
So the other 36, are they like, have they closed all the loopholes, or is it just like South Africa that's mm-hmm. just wide open, and 36 out of the 37 are all running perfectly?
Okay. So they've all implemented it. There's also what they call member jurisdictions, which isn't members, but it's different areas. So that's most of the world, actually, I think, would be on there. I know that New Zealand, Australia have been implementing this. The UK is working on it. This morning I got information that the GAA, the Global Accounting, they're also working on this. So they're definitely closing all the loops.
But then you'll just, if I was then illicit, mm-hmm. I'd just not operate here in South Africa, and then I'd go to a jurisdiction that wasn't doing it. So how does it solve the problem globally because you can't get everyone in the world to comply? It'll just move to those other countries. Mm-hmm. But is it, and maybe I'm going to answer my own question, is it like what happened in Mauritius, where now there was lack of investment in those countries mm-hmm. as a result of not complying, and that's the incentive to comply? I'm just trying to find out, why is there an incentive to comply with this as a country? What's the incentive for us?
Sure. I think the incentive is that you're seen as a country that fights this. I mean, we talk about terrorist financing. We're talking about money laundering, which probably money laundering doesn't sound like it hurts so many people. But you've got human trafficking. I think you don't want to be associated with those type of activities.
Okay. We're going to leave it there. That was our regular, very, very regular doom and gloom merchant, Juanita Steenkamp. And we're going to take a break now. We'll be right back straight after this.